Al Jazeera Podcasts.
Today, the world's largest election is underway in India, with close to a billion people eligible to vote. They're likely to re-elect Prime Minister Narendra Modi.
Most opinion polls predict a comfortable win for Prime Minister Modi, who is seeking a third consecutive term.
But what would a third term for Modi mean for India? I'm Kevin Hurton, and this is The Take.
In a democracy, we should not take elections lightly. It is a very big, grand event. And my opinion is that it should be celebrated as such, like when there's a sports festival or event.
India's elections are often described as a festival, as you just heard there from Prime Minister Modi. Getting around 970 million eligible voters, which is about 10% of the global population, to the polls is a monumental task.
They'll be choosing the members of India's lower house of parliament in a phased process that's set to last 6 weeks, with results announced on June 4th.
Voting takes place in seven staggered stages, moving across the country, making sure there's enough of a security presence in each place. Polls and experts are predicting a third term for Modi and his Bharatiya Janata Party, or BJP. But despite his popularity, Modi is also divisive, for reasons we're about to get into.
There is a kind of cultish following that has been created.
That voice you just heard was Siddharth Bhatia, who also goes by Sid. He's a founding editor of the independent news outlet, The Wire. So, Sid, this is a big year for elections. In fact, I think it's a record number of elections worldwide this year. And in a lot of cases, the incumbents are incredibly unpopular. That is not the case for India's prime minister. So maybe to start out, we can talk about Modi as a man and as a politician. What is it about his appeal that makes his followers follow him so passionately?
Yeah, so that's a mystery that has been explained in many ways. There is a sense of cultish following that he has. Partly it is his appeal of being a robust speaker in public.
Bharat Mata Ki. Bharat Mata Ki.
He's got that tremendous persona which reaches out to his followers. However, he never gives press conferences and his followers don't care. So his followers have followed him, one can call them devotees, continuously for many, many years. Whatever he says, whatever the state of the economy, whatever is happening in terms of social upheaval in the country, they will follow him nonetheless.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been seen among many, many other politicians around the world. Trump is one very, very good example.
Yes, I'm seeing the parallels. So whether you like him or not, it's safe to say he has a certain type of charisma that appeals to a certain segment of the population.
It is a charisma of a certain kind, buttressed and supported by a very, very friendly media.
Mm.
Narendra Modi, among the foremost, if not the foremost global statesman of the world today.
Which only covers him in glowing terms and rubbishes the opposition. While the duty of journalists is the other way around, is to question the person in power on behalf of the viewer, the reader, but that's not happening in India.
Okay, so we've seen this charisma, we've seen this glowing coverage, but on the other hand, he's enacted policies that have been seen as discriminatory against minorities, particularly Muslims.
The United Nations has slammed India's new citizenship law for being fundamentally discriminatory in nature. It says the new law, which excludes Muslims, violates India's human rights commitments and has called for it to be reviewed.
There has also been violence against Muslims in his time in office, which his party has been seen to encourage or at least do very little about.
The BJP denies that they are persecuting Muslims. But there's no doubt that anti-Muslim sentiment is on the rise.
Just outside Goa, a Muslim man was beaten by a mob, forced to chant the name of a Hindu deity. And in Jaipur in the northwest, Muhammad Asghar Ali was among three Muslim passengers shot dead by a railway policeman on a train.
So, with all that in mind, how dramatically would you say the social fabric of India has changed during the 10 years Modi has been in power?
I would say it has changed a lot. This is not the India I remember while growing up. This is not the India of even 15 years ago. There was always anti-Muslim prejudice, but that prejudice was kept in people's minds or in private conversations. So Mr. Modi has articulated it in brilliant ways and he's gone and found a ready-made audience. So the idea is to show that Hinduism is not only superior to these religions, but it's the original religion of this country. And that's been done in many ways. Yogi Adityanath, the chief minister of one big province, renamed a whole host of cities to Hindu name. The same thing is happening elsewhere too. It's to show that these are the original names of these cities because India is a land originally of the Hindus. Anybody who is a non-Hindu is an outsider.
They've even rewritten government history books to remove mentions of Muslim rulers, and in some cases, even renamed streets named after Indian Muslims.
Social media has entered the picture and spread that anti-Muslim rhetoric quite a lot. And I would say in that mainstream television has been extremely responsible for it. And the supporters of his party have gone and perpetrated violence.
Self-appointed guardians of cows, which are sacred to Hindus, claim they're being illegally slaughtered. And they're not afraid to use violence to stop that. The vast majority of those killed were Muslims.
So this has all affected the fabric of India, I would say, in a big way.
Yeah, how does this brand of Hindu nationalism clash with the founding charter of the country?
It clashes a lot. And it completely goes against the secular values for which Indian freedom fighters fought against the British. And when India became an independent country in 1947, our first Prime Minister Nehru was a committed secularist. There were people who were anti-Muslim even then, but they were kept away from any policy making, more or less. And that was the secular charter, as you say, the secular ethos of India. And that has been not only challenged, I'm afraid that's been dented.
Are you surprised, as somebody who grew up in India, about this appeal of Hindu nationalism and the willingness to throw away many of the founding ideas of India?
No, I don't find it surprising because countries go through different phases. Don't forget, many generations have grown up since then. We keep talking about our secular founding, and the younger generation doesn't have that same connection with that history.
Yeah.
So they look towards Modi, and something he says strikes a chord with them. If you're going to talk to a 22-year-old, he's going to say, before Modi, I have no idea what existed.
Yeah.
History began with Mr. Modi.
More after the break.
Get your news in less than 3 minutes, three times per day with the Al Jazeera News Updates. Just ask your home device to play the news by Al Jazeera or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
So, Sid, it sounds like there's very little space for dissent, at least in the public sphere. In the annual World Press Freedom Index, India has dropped more than 20 places, actually. It's 161st out of 180 during Modi's time in power. And with this election, we've seen opposition parties and politicians targeted over corruption allegations that are seen at least to be politically motivated.
A coalition of opposition parties in India are holding a mega rally in Delhi against what they say is the decaying of democracy under Prime Minister Narendra Modi's rule. This follows the arrest of senior opposition figure and Delhi Chief Minister Arvind Kejriwal in connection with a long-running corruption probe.
I mean, how concerned are you about the state of democratic institutions in India? I mean, are they holding?
Press freedom has been affected because many journalists were jailed and many journalists find themselves. The circumstances are extremely difficult. The Wire is one of those which challenges the government, challenges policies, challenges this aggressive Hindu nationalism. And we faced quite a few problems while doing it. And when you come to the opposition parties, yes, opposition parties have been targeted. So yes, dissent has been quashed or is being quashed. But that does not mean there are no dissenters.
So let's talk about who Modi's up against this year. Last year, a coalition that goes by the acronym India was formed. It's a multi-party alliance aimed at unseating Modi. But they're not expected to do particularly well. We don't know, but they're not expected to do particularly well. We talked a little bit about the opposition candidates and parties being arrested or investigated for possible corruption. Is that what's holding them back from being more of a force in this election? Or is there something more? Why do you think they're not gaining traction?
All the assumptions you have made can be challenged.
Challenge away.
They are not, they do not have traction, etc. The opposition parties have been handicapped, but the opposition parties have also found it difficult because that India, INDIA, found two members walking away. One joined Mr. Modi's party, and the other said, we will fight the elections on our own. These were two crucial pillars of this coalition, and that can have a very, very serious effect. The objective is not to totally to unseat Mr. Modi, because Mr. Modi's party will still win a lot of seats, most seats. The objective is to cut down his majority to such an extent that he is considerably weakened. And I think that's up in the air. They well might do it.
One thing that Prime Minister Modi has been credited for is the fact that India is one of the world's fastest growing major economies. But unemployment, particularly among young people, many of which are first-time voters, is incredibly high. I mean, it's over 44% for people between the age of 20 to 24. So some people are doing quite well, but inequality is growing. How big of an issue do you think this is? Do you think this might play a role in this election?
The thing is that India's economy has grown in what we call a K formation. The rich have become phenomenally rich, and the poor have become extremely poor. They have become poorer and poorer, and more people have joined the ranks of the low middle class and the poor. I think the time has come where that is going to register itself in the election. I honestly think young people will get excited at the idea of an election, but they will be looking for jobs. Voters will be looking for people who promise them and assure them of cheaper food. So the economy is going to play a big role. And if you see rich people partying in public, more or less, it's going to affect people's morale.
Anand Ambani, he's the youngest son of Indian billionaire Mukesh Ambani. He's marrying his childhood sweetheart. The VIP list is huge.
India's wedding of the year taking place. This is a three-day pre-wedding party. The biggest CEOs, celebrities in the world invited.
But just to play devil's advocate real fast on the economy hurting Modi, I mean, during his first term, people were hit hard by things like demonetization, which hit a lot of poor people.
The government banned 1,500 rupee notes, wiping out 86% of the country's currency. The worst affected are migrants and daily wage workers whose employers continue to pay them in the old currency.
I mean, unemployment was high then too, and yet Modi and the BJP still won. So it's about translating that economic anxiety into votes for the opposition, which we've seen Modi be very successful at rallying people despite the economy.
That is a good point, and I can't challenge it. But we are talking the third term. That was the first term, and they said he's trying his best. Don't forget, in the second term, the handling of COVID in the second wave was, he saw a lot of people dying because of poor handling and lack of oxygen and things like that. We are going to see some effects, but I think this time the economy is going to play a role.
Let me just ask you one more question, Sid. We talked about what's changed in India under Modi over the past 10 years, right? India is a very different country from what it was when he first took power. What do you think it would look like after another 5 years of Modi's rule?
I can only speculate, but I think there will be serious changes to the constitution. Formal changes. At least two BJP candidates have said it openly that we want to win a good number of seats so that we can change the constitution. So I'm not pulling this rabbit out of a hat. I think the word secular, which is in the constitution, would definitely go. There are legitimate fears that the minorities will become formally, with laws, even stricter laws in place, second-class citizens.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid dissent will be quashed even more strongly. Are Indians proud of their democracy? Yes. But would Indians worry too much if that democracy is taken away? At this moment, I cannot answer that question.
And that's The Take. This episode was produced by Ashish Malhotra, Farnis Kampana, and Manahil Navid, with Chloe K. Lee, Suri El Khalili, Amy Walters, Nagin Oliai, Khalid Sultan, David Enders, Sonia Bhagat, Zainab Adar, Catherine Nguyen, and me, Kevin Hurton, in for Malika Bilal. Our sound designer is Alex Roldan. Alexander Locke is The Take's executive producer, and Ney Alvarez is Al Jazeera's head of audio. We'll be back.